Talking this week to someone who works at Gatwick, it's clear that the level of security has diminished, but the level of fear doesn't seem to have. There is apparently much more a general sense of tension around the airport than there used to be. And fear, I think, is part of our experience of life. It's something that we have to learn to live with, and terrorism is only one of them. On the global scale, we hear about climate change. On the international scale, we worry about...
This show was made with a trial version of propaganda software. You can remove this message by buying the full version.
And who might take them away? We worry about mindless, senseless violence, even by 11-year-olds on 4-year-olds. And we're left insecure and needing reassurance. But of course we're not the first generation to have lived in this kind of world. And when St. Paul wrote to the Ephesians, he wrote to them about the potentates of this dark age, the superhuman forces of this evil world, cosmic powers. Taking the same sense of fear, but moving it up a notch and making it part of the global, universal experience of life. There are forces there which seek to destroy us. This is his message, but his answer is, but be strong in the strength of the Lord, and, interestingly, he uses a soldier's armoury to illustrate that strength. Imagine him, an ambassador in chains, he calls himself, imprisoned in Rome, not able to do the work that he wants to do so committedly. Chained perhaps not just to the wall, but maybe even to one of those same Roman soldiers. And as he looks at the soldier there with his armour on, he has a different kind of armour to protect him. Joshua was in quite a different experience, situation. His experience was of being really, I wouldn't say complacent, but he was coming to the end of his life and had, as it were, put the forces which seemed to be ganging up against the people of Israel as they moved into Canaan in their place. By and large, the people were now established, and it was because of his rule that they'd been able to achieve that. And so here he was at the end of his life, wanting to reassure them, not just about the past, but about the future. And in the reading that we heard, he wants them to make a new covenant, yet another new covenant with God. But he offers them a choice. Do you want the God who will protect you and stay with you, even if your present period of success ends and you really begin to experience threat and challenge again? Now, I don't know where you are in your life and who you will identify with. You may feel like Paul, that the forces in the world are conspiring and putting you in chains and holding you in thrall, and you feel overwhelmed by fears and worries and anxieties. Or you may be in a position like Joshua where actually life's been pretty good recently. You haven't experienced anything like that, but you know it may one day happen. And whichever situation or somewhere in between we're in, we want to know how God can help us to deal with this sense of threat and with these fears. And I want to help us do that by looking at that Joshua passage primarily. Because what Joshua, as I've just said, does is to offer the people of Israel a choice. He says, I want you to believe in the living God. But, he said, if you don't want to do that, you have choices. You could go to the gods of the past. You could go to the gods who you worshipped when you were in Egypt, when you were in captivity, when you were in slavery. Gods that will remind you of your slavery and keep you in slavery. God who actually won't give you the freedom and confidence that you need given the threat that you might face. I think we might be tempted sometimes to go for the gods of our slavery. There's an interesting book by Sarah Mason, who's a Christian novelist, called Virgin Territory. And in it, the main character is called Anna. And she, various things happen to her, interesting story. But actually, I maybe shouldn't have said that, because although the main human character is Anna, much more powerful in the way you remember the novel is a group called the Fathers. And the Fathers are...
This show was made with the trial version of propaganda software. You can remove this message by buying the full version.
All the people who've influenced her in her life, all of whose influence is to some extent still there, nattering away at her. So that almost whatever happens, she has some reaction, but the Fathers have a different one. And generally speaking, the Fathers are much more restrictive. They want to hold her back from being brave and courageous and doing things that are challenging. And what's more, they tend to put her down. They tend to say, well, you won't be able to do that, or that's not you, or you naughty girl. And it's the way in which she deals with this relationship with the Fathers that is the underlying theme of the story. Now, have you got fathers in your head? Or something like that? A voice there which comes from maybe a parent figure, maybe a school teacher figure, maybe other figures in your life who have tried to hold you back, have put you down and made you feel inadequate instead of building you up and giving you confidence. And do those voices come back at crucial moments when actually what you need is encouragement and what they do is put you down? Because if so, you're like most people. And the trouble, I think, very often with us Christians is that it's very easy to identify that voice with the voice of God. To somehow assume, because of the kind of moral tone, usually, to these voices, to assume that this is God trying to say to us, you shouldn't be doing that, you should be doing the other. And it's a God of slavery. It's a God who's not setting us free. It's a God who's restricting us. It's a God who doesn't exist. But in our own head. And when Joshua says to the people of Israel, you can have the gods of slavery as you like, he might, if you were here now, be saying to us, yes, okay, have that kind of God if you like. Be restricted. Let those voices dominate your life. But I don't recommend it. And then he goes on to talk about another God, not the God of the past, but the God of the present. The God of the people where they're living. Because here they are in Canaan, among the Canaanites. Yes, they're the conquerors, but they've managed to inevitably absorb some of the culture of the land that they've moved into. And he says, well, okay, there's another choice. You could go with those gods. Well, now, those gods, by and large, were represented by natural objects, maybe the stream or a mountaintop or a tree. And what the Canaanites did was to build a shrine, and people would take offerings to these various shrines. And the whole purpose of this worship, this ritual, was to persuade God to provide good fertility for the flocks and the animals and good weather for crops to grow. It was about trying to persuade God to do what you thought you wanted. And I think Joshua might well be saying to us, he was here today, is that your God? You can have that kind of God if you like, a God who you try and manipulate, a God who gives you the impression of being able to control these things. I mean, most of us know the natural world can't be controlled and these things happen. Unlike the chap who was waiting in the waiting room outside the maternity ward, group of expectant fathers. He'd been there a while, and out came a nurse and waved to another man and said, "Congratulations, you've got a son." And our friend put down his paper and stood up and said, "You must be wrong, it must be me, I've been here longer than him." But we know we can't control fertility or childbirth or the world and its natural disaster. And yet, somehow there's a popular assumption that you can. And I think if we were to absorb the religion around us, in our culture, that's what we would be absorbing, an assumption that what...
This show was made with the trial version of propaganda software. You can remove this message by buying the full version.
To somehow persuade God that we deserve special treatment, to protect us from these dangerous things of which we're quite rightly often afraid. And that's not how God is. Because these promises of these false gods to control things, to make things better if we trust them, are just rubbish. And the thing is, of course, people who don't know about Christianity know they're rubbish. And if what they think is that that's what Christianity is all about, trying to persuade God to look after us, they can see that God doesn't look after Christians any more than anybody else. So of course they're not interested if that's what they think religion is all about. So we don't want to absorb that. We don't want to absorb any of that. There is nothing about our faith which says we're going to get special treatment or somehow things will not happen to us though they might happen to others. It's not about a God of control. And so Joshua says to the people of Israel, you can have, if you like, a God of slavery, a God from your past, or a God who promises to deliver but never does, the God of the present people around you. But that kind of God wouldn't help. That kind of God wouldn't give you what you really need when life's a struggle. When you know that it can't be taken away, what you're going through. When you know that what you need is encouragement, not being put down. Those are not the kind of gods you need. What you need is the living Lord. And the people of Israel say, yes, that's the kind of God we're going to have. They say, look at what God has done for us. He's brought us out of Egypt. He's brought us through the wilderness, and now we're here in this land. This is the God we want. And they're right. That's the kind of God, that's the living God who we worship and who's going to help us through as we deal with our fears. And I think this way of describing God says two things about him. The people of Israel clearly felt that he was their God, that it was a personal relationship. If you read carefully those two verses that Clem read to us, it's God did this for us. God did this before our eyes. It was for our sake that God did this. Very much a sense of God and you and me and them, a personal relationship. And a relationship that builds, that encourages, that nurtures. From a God whose desire to have a personal relationship with us gives us significance and therefore a sense of value and therefore a sense of confidence. I remember the young local preacher. I was in Cambridge and I used to have to go out and preach in all sorts of village chapels. 10-mile cycle ride there and 10-mile cycle ride back. And then one evening when I was going out, the superintendent minister said, "Can I come with you?" I thought, "You don't want to come with me. You've got an evening off." And he said, "No, I want to come. I want to hear how you're getting on. I want to support you." And he came, gave me a lift, which is nice. Do you know, that did more for me than almost anything else in my preaching, because here was somebody who really wanted to go out of his way to be with me. He didn't say very much afterwards. It wasn't a question of testing me or examining me or seeing whether I was up to it. He just wanted to be there. Because we had that kind of relationship. And that's the kind of relationship God has with us. This God who's a personal God, who just wants to be with us. Not to test us, not to push us, just to be with us. And doesn't that boost our morale? Doesn't that give us a kind of confidence, a kind of assurance that we will be all right, that no other kind of God can give? And it's not just a God who's personal. It's a God who stays with us. A God who stays with us when actually we don't really deserve it, when we don't trust him, when we let him down. Like the people of Israel did time and time again. And he stayed with them. And he stayed with them through their fears. He was there alongside them. Some of them were ridiculous. I mean, this idea that there were giants in Canaan.
This show was made with the trial version of Propaganda Software. You can remove this message by buying the full version.
Quite unnecessary. We magnify things way beyond what they're really all about. It doesn't matter. God will still be there taking those fears just as seriously as we do. And then that's the other time, perhaps, when God will allow us to miss out on a challenge that's too much for us. There's a lovely moment in the story of the journey through the wilderness where God, we're told, doesn't take them that way, because the people they would come across the first time they come across that way will be too much for them. So they go that way. And doesn't God deal with our fears like that sometimes? Just helps us to find a way round them, so we don't actually necessarily have to confront head on what it is that's worrying us. And then there are times when God just says to the people of Israel, I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to commit. You're just going to have to trust me. And God says that to us sometimes. But it's a God who we willingly do that to, who we willingly trust, because we know he's a God who wants to relate to us, who wants to be there during our times of struggle and to deal with our fears. That's the kind of God that's a God of the future. A God that we can trust to take us forward into whatever lies ahead. And that's, I assume, the way Paul was thinking. There was he, not knowing whether he'd ever get out of his jail, whether the things that were holding him down would ever go away and he'd be able to move on. But there he is saying, be strong in the strength of the Lord. Yes, the belt of truth, the breastplate of integrity, sword, faith. Yes, these are all symbols, but beneath it all is a trust in a God who's not a God who's going to put us down, who's not a God who's going to put everything right, but is a God who will stay with us, alongside us, and support us through whatever the future may bring.